This is a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
This is what a leading researcher working in mainland China had to say about China's policy about the world's major religions.
Rooted in an outdated Marxist outlook that sees religion as a backward and reactionary idealism, and crackdown on containment are the only response.
This person is a member of the Chinese Communist Party and has requested anonymity. This person is talking broadly about China's approach to the Catholics, Protestants, followers of Tibetan Buddhism, and Muslims.
Religions and religious believers are products of an evolving society. Completely denying the value of religion today is no different than completely denying the value of our own society. This is pure self-sabotage.
For decades, Roman Catholic bishops in mainland China have faced a choice: remain loyal to the Pope and the Vatican and face pressure, harassment, or even jail. Or join a government-sanctioned Chinese Patriotic Catholic Association. But this week, after three decades of negotiations, the Vatican and Beijing central government have come to an agreement. Well, almost. I could tell you it's a historic moment, but really, the historic moment was 2 years ago. That was when Beijing agreed to recognize the Pope as the head of the Roman Catholic Church in China for the first time, and the Vatican has agreed to swap two of its bishops for two choices chosen by Beijing. It is an agreement to continue with the same temporary agreement made 2 years ago for another 2 years. It is a compromise, and has left very few people satisfied with the result. This agreement is not just something that affects the estimated 12 million people in mainland China who identify as Catholics. The Pope has been labeled a hypocrite for striking this compromise with the Chinese Communist Party and selling out the bishops involved in the underground Catholic Church in mainland China. It's filled criticism of the Vatican's silence about human rights abuse and religious oppression in Hong Kong, Tibet and Xinjiang. And it also threatens to draw the Pope into the 2020 U.S. presidential election. My name is Mimi Lau, and welcome to the Inside China podcast.
My name is Kinling Lo, and in this week's episode, we are going to explain how the Roman Catholic Church survives in modern communist China. We are going to bring you up to speed on the diplomatic row between the Vatican and Beijing that began in 1951 when the newly established government, the People's Republic of China under Mao Zedong, eliminated all religions, expelling the Catholic missionaries, demolishing churches, and jailing those people who declared the Pope as the leader of their religion. You are going to hear how Beijing's relationship with the Vatican is crucial to its global diplomatic ambitions.
It proves to the world that Beijing is not so bad. There is a possibility to talk to Beijing and to gain something from Beijing through talking. This is extremely important in a time when many countries and many people would like to go to war with Beijing.
How Pope Francis finds himself being a target of lobbying by the U.S. Secretary of State.
The Chinese Communist Party has battered every religious community in China. Protestant house churches, Tibetan Buddhists, Falun Gong devotees. Nor, of course, have Catholics been spared this wave of repression.
So what is Secretary of State Pompeo doing? He is putting forward his views, not to the Pope directly, but in a very right-wing, very conservative Catholic publication that has already said that Francis is a illegitimate pope, has been very critical. And so what is happening is that you see the Sino-Vatican relationship being pulled into internal American politics.
Catholic churches and shrines have been desecrated and destroyed. Catholic bishops, like Augustine, Shuai Tai, have been imprisoned as a priest in Italy. And Catholic lay leaders in the human rights movement, not least in Hong Kong, have been arrested. Authorities order residents to replace pictures of Jesus with those of Chairman Mao and those of General Secretary Xi Jinping.
And how this decision involves an island described by China as a breakaway province.
But there's something else that's going on here, and that's, of course, Taiwan. The Vatican still officially recognizes the Republic of China and Taiwan as the legitimate government of China. In many ways, this is like the card that the Vatican is holding.
We have published many in-depth articles about this subject on the South China Morning Post website at semp.com. And Mimi, you've written most of them. Can you start by explaining to us there are two different Catholic communities in mainland China that are known as the official Patriotic Church and the Underground Church? How are they different?
So there are about estimated 12 million of mainland Chinese Catholics, and about half of them worship in government-sanctioned churches, another half in underground churches or independent-operated Catholic churches. And the bishops for these dioceses are endorsed by the Vatican and often not recognized by Beijing.
How about the bishops from the official Patriotic Church? Are they endorsed by both the Vatican and Beijing?
Until today, all of China's government-chosen bishops are in communion with Pope Francis. That is to say, they are endorsed by both Beijing and the Vatican. But the underground Catholic community in China continue to face persecution, and especially their clergy, the priests and nuns, and even the charity that they operated are being pressured. Until the underground community have registered with the government, it is still a division, a schism that both sides are trying to seek reconciliation with.
So when we talk about underground churches, how secretive are they? Like, will we be able to find them along the streets?
This is a question really depends on who is doing the asking. For the mainland Chinese government, there's nothing secret in their eyes. There are surveillance cameras everywhere. There are officials. There are people watching all the religious activities, whether it is underground or not. But for an outsider like you and I, if we want to go actually track down an underground church, it will actually be quite difficult. Theoretically, the identities of the underground bishops are only held by the Vatican in Rome. But these days, nothing, as I said before, but these days, nothing remains a secret anymore. And the mainland Chinese government officials have been working to get these underground bishops to register with the government. But the tension has continued until this day, 2 years after the agreement has been signed. And the progress of seeking a reconciliation between the official church and the underground church in China has not been very ideal.
Right. Since there are like these associated risks related to people who are attending these underground churches, actually, out of the interviewees you have talked to, why do people want to go to an underground church instead of an official church? And why do underground bishops not want to be recognized by the Chinese official church?
This is a very complicated question. This is a question that demands a very complicated answer. But simply put, it is mainly due to history and traditions of how the diocese had been laid out over hundreds of years.
So your latest exclusive story tells us that the Vatican and Beijing have actually renewed the agreement they signed 2 years ago. Can you tell us what this agreement is actually about?
This agreement that was signed 2 years ago on a provisional basis is an experiment, groundbreaking one too, to mark for the first time the Communist Party's willingness to recognize the Pope as the universal head of Roman Catholic Church, including the one in China. I said this is groundbreaking because in the past, Beijing select and ordain its own bishops without the Pope's approval. And now, after decades of negotiation, they have finally come to an agreement to work out an experimental model to explore a new way of appointing bishop. That is, we understood that Beijing would come up with a number of candidates for bishops, and it's up to the Pope to select. We don't know the number of candidates because of the agreement's details have remained secret until today. But the Vatican has seen this as the first of many steps to come to eventually to bring the entire Catholic Church in China into unity.
People listening are probably more familiar with the news reports about the crackdown on Muslims in Xinjiang. Mimi, what are some of the things you've reported on the crackdowns of bishops of these underground churches?
So for underground churches in China, persecution and arrest is part of their daily lives for decades. It is nothing new and it's been ongoing. But people would expect a better outcome when there's a breakthrough of agreement between the Vatican and Beijing, essentially, hopefully to see a diminishing intensity of the arrest and persecution. For example, the Shanghai bishop, Ma Daqing, is still being held under partial house arrest in the city's Sheshan Seminary. And the bishop of Baoding, James Su Zhimin, has been missing for almost 20 years, and his whereabouts is still nowhere to be seen. It has been rumored that he has already passed away. And many other people, like Bishop Augustine Cui Tai from Xuanhua in Hebei province, was detained recently, and we still don't know his whereabouts. So stories like this, and also not just the bishops, but the priests and the nuns, and including the charities the underground church operated, they are still subject to persecution, and this is part of their daily lives.
So you've told us the situations that bishop and church members face. Are there any other new rules from China?
Yeah, in the past few years, under the leadership of President Xi Jinping, religious policies have been tightened, that including minors, people who are under 18, are banned from entering any religious venues, including churches and mosques. And also the crosses on churches and the crescent moon on mosques have been taken down. Gatherings of any forms that are not sanctioned by the government have been subject to a lot of crackdowns. We're seeing major churches being closed down, but that is not just limited to Catholics, but for all the other religions in China. So now let me bring you analysis of this historic agreement from two experts on this issue. The first one is an Italian who normally lives in China. This is Francesco Sisi. He's a sinologist with the Renmin University of China in Beijing, but currently he's in Rome, waiting for it to be safe to travel back to China after the pandemic.
Can you explain to us what is the significance of Beijing and Rome renewing this agreement? Why is it such a big deal, and why is the world, it seems to be making such a big fuss out of it?
Because the renewal of this agreement was not granted. It was not sure. When the agreement was signed the first time, somehow it was a big surprise, but there was no opposition because it was something new. And also, overall, globally, there was not so much pressure and animosity, hostility against China. However, 2 years after, we have much bigger animosity, much bigger hostility, and also people argue that the results of these 2 years agreement have been too little. And therefore, it is a very, very big deal for the for both sides to renew this agreement. I would say also for the Vatican to renew this agreement, because there are lots of tensions in the international Catholic community against China and against this deal. So the fact that the Holy See managed to contain this tendency against China and this hostility against China and to renew a deal means that the Holy See managed to talk 1.3 billion people, the Catholics in the world, who are all over the world, into believing that some more results can be achieved in the next few years with China.
What does it really mean?
What can people expect from it in the next 2 years?
I can tell you what the Vatican expects. The life of the Catholic Church will improve in China. There are about 40 dioceses without bishops. So there are maybe over 100 new bishops to be appointed. And according to the agreement, they have to be appointed together. There should be also some improvement in the life of the Catholic community. Inside China, the Catholics want more unity with Rome. Unity with Rome, what does it mean? It means that they will have new pastors, new bishops. Many of the Chinese bishops are very old, over 80 years old. So in theory, a bishop should retire by 70, 71, 72. So many of the bishops, existing bishops, should retire and new bishops should be appointed. What they want is new bishops who are chosen with the agreement. They hope to have a closer connection with the Holy See. A very basic issue for the Catholics is to be in communion with the Pope, in unity with the Pope. So this is extremely important for Catholics, to follow the Pope, to listen to the Pope, to know that they are spiritually in communion with the Pope. It is extremely important. This is a religion, you know, it's not a zero-sum game or a business where you have to make money, or a strategy where you have to occupy new land.
In light of such strong opposition from around the world, especially from Pompeo in US, we know that now that China knows so many people are watching it, would it actually change the way Beijing handles Catholic affairs in the next 2 years?
What the Vatican hopes is that Beijing will improve the ways in which it treats Catholics and, I would say, in general, religious believers, religions. They hope in an improvement, not change dramatically with the Catholic Church. The Vatican is not naive, understands that changes cannot happen overnight, but improvements, massive improvements, yes, they are expected.
Can you spell out the political value that Beijing stands to gain from renewing this agreement?
That is not a gain, it's a soft value, is good name, is good reputation. It proves to the world that Beijing is not so bad. There is a possibility to talk to Beijing and to gain something from Beijing through talking. This is extremely important in a time when many countries and many people would like to go to war with Beijing. This is extremely, extremely valuable.
Why do you think Beijing is letting Vatican do all the solo dancing and it has been so tight-lipped about expressing its preferences if this thing does benefit China so much?
I think my impression, of course, I'm not Chinese, as you can see, but my impression is that until very recently, and even now, China doesn't understand what is really the Vatican in this world. In the past 40 years, I would say, its relationship with the world was mediated through the United States. China dealt with the United States and then with the rest of the world.
That's Francesco Sisi from the Renmin University of China. But I want to take you to the United States now.
Lawrence C. Reardon, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of New Hampshire in the United States of America.
He is an expert on Chinese politics and its relationship with religion.
What does it mean for the Catholics in China? How would it improve their life there?
First off, I think you have to look at this renewal in the context not just of COVID,
but of the People's Republic of China's attitudes toward organized religion over the past couple of years, and specifically the Catholic Church. Xi Jinping has been tightening restrictions on religion, and we've seen the cases in which, you know, the church steeples have been brought down, and there have been questions about the young people being able to attend religious activities. And this is not just with the Catholic Church, but it's for all religions. So now you have, in the middle of all this tightening of religious policies, an agreement between the Vatican and the Chinese Catholic Church / the Communist Party to experiment with a new form of choosing bishops that in the past, the Patriotic Church had self-nominations of bishops and self-ordination. Well, now, which was completely against the Catholic Church's attitudes about its integrity. 2,000 years of running of the church, they did not want to have a foreign country choosing the leadership of the church. So here there was an agreement to experiment with this new method. It's a little bit different than the method that was being used in Vietnam, but kind of reverse of the method of Vietnam. But the point is that there has been a degree of progress, limited progress, but the significance is that they're continued to experiment with this, and that in a period of time where the Communist Party has been restricting so much religious activities in China, here is a situation in which the Communist Party is allowing an outside government, an outside religious organization, to choose leaders. That's an impressive achievement at this point. Again, it's just the first step toward a reconciliation, both of the official and unofficial Catholic Church, but also between the official Catholic Church and the Vatican. So this is not this, it's an initial agreement. It's the first step of many agreements that need to be worked out in the future.
The renewal of this agreement is a continuation of the effort, a groundbreaking effort 2 years ago. But you're saying because religious policy has been tightened up in the past 2 years, this round of renewal means it carries an even more significant impact in that a more astonishing contrast to how much leniency the CCP is showing towards organized religions. Would you put it that way?
Well, I would put it toward the Catholic Church. You're showing there's a more leniency being shown toward the Catholic Church. I've always wondered, you know, why are they keeping this agreement secret? And what I have read, and maybe you have more background, but I've heard that it's the Communist Party that wants to keep it secret. And in part, why should they allow other religions to have this type of power? This is more so than other religions.
And also, when the agreement first signed 2 years ago, there was not so much opposition as it is facing today, not so much animosity, probably because no one knew about this agreement. But after 2 years of developing and brewing, and now we are seeing all kinds of opposition from the Pope's own cardinals, rising in Australia and Hong Kong and Asia, and then now we have Pompeo. So can you explain to us what tangible benefit would this renewal of agreement bring to the Catholics inside China?
Well, I think this is something that many people outside of China have little understanding of, and that was this division between the official and the unofficial church. Of course, you know, on the outside, we say the underground church, but this division is something that was exacerbated in the 1980s, in part because Pope John Paul II, St. John Paul, had promoted this unofficial church because that after the Cultural Revolution and the church was once again able to open up, the Vatican was unable to promote its particular views, its personnel, so forth. So he said, let's expand the underground church. And in many ways, he was looking at his experience in Poland. He was looking at the way that the Polish church was able to help transform Poland. But after 20 or so years of experimentation, he discovered that instead of helping to open up China, that it had created this establishment of an official and unofficial church had created a growing schism within the Catholic movement. And where on one hand, within the Protestant movement, you had this huge expansion of beliefs, while in the Catholic faith, you had infighting between those who believed that the Pope was the sole arbiter of truth, and those that believed that the party state had a larger role. And this was in part because of this expansion of the underground church. This is where you see John Paul after 2000, when he wasn't able to go to China. That was one of his greatest hopes, to be able to go to China. He wasn't allowed to. He puts at that time Archbishop Parolin into the Secretary of State's office, where he begins to explore how to deal with communist states. And eventually he's the one, now Cardinal Parolin, who works out this relationship with Vietnam. When Benedict the 16th is appointed Pope, Benedict is the one that says we need to bring an end to this division. He's recognizing that this is becoming a schismatic church. He needs to, that these two opposing forces needed to go through a period of reconciliation. And so this had been supported by John Paul after 2000. Benedict was promoting it. And then you see with this agreement in 2018, Francis is able to get the first step forward to promoting reconciliation of the underground and the official church.
We want to look at why is this renewal of agreement has attracted so much opposition from U.S. and how does the U.S. Catholics community see Pope Francis?
Again, recognizing that it's not the opposition, it's not just coming from the United States. You also have the former Cardinal Zen from Hong Kong, who's one of the most vociferous opponents, who is being often quoted in the United States by Pompeo and others, pointing at this agreement is not good for the Catholic Church. Now, you know, when you look at this, I'm kind of shocked to see the Secretary of State becoming involved in Sino-Vatican relations. We just established relations with the Vatican. This is something relatively new. So then you have to start asking yourself, what's going on here? You have to ask yourself, who is the ambassador to the Vatican? And it's Callista Gingrich, whose husband was the House Republican leader, who's become a born-again Catholic. So you have a political appointees that are in the middle of a life-and-death struggle here in the United States in the November election, and they're trying to organize the Catholic vote. And they believe they can do this by touching on a very old fear within the Catholic community of China and its way that it's treated Catholics since the 1950s. I was brought up with those stories about Catholics being put into prisons and all the horrible stories. So what is Secretary of State Pompeo doing? He is putting forward his views, not to the Pope directly, but in a very right-wing, very conservative Catholic publication in the United States called First Things, that has already said that Francis is a illegitimate pope, has been very critical. And so what is happening is that you see the Sino-Vatican relationship being pulled into internal American politics. And you have conservative Catholics like Pompeo, who has been encouraged by people like the former papal nuncio, Archbishop Vigano, who has another history here. You have all types of actors here who are, their primary goal is to organize the Catholic vote. They don't want to lose the Catholic vote, and they believe by focusing on the China threat that they'll be able to consolidate the control over Catholics and push them out to voting in November.
And Beijing has remained so tight-lipped in the last few months regarding its intention whether it will renew the agreement with Rome or not, leaving the Pope dancing alone on himself, showing repeatedly that his willingness to extend the renewal. What is Beijing has been thinking the past few months, and why, what explained this tight-lipped attitude towards them?
Well, of course, we're not seeing all the interactions between the two. You know, you've got two organizations that are probably the two of the most secretive organizations in the world. And I've always made the argument that I think I know more what's going on in Beijing than I know what's going on in the Vatican. Which, as a China person, that's kind of hilarious. So we don't really know. But, you know, there have been these hints. For instance, when you get the Gallagher, this fellow who is basically representing the Vatican in these negotiations, key point person, actually meeting with top Chinese officials in February. When you see the foreign minister starting to talk about this relationship in a somewhat positive fashion. So, you know, what I would say, first off, obviously, the Beijing leadership is mostly concerned about COVID. They're concerned about what President Trump is doing with U.S. Chinese relations. There are other issues around. But there's also another issue that they're having to deal with, and that, of course, is religion and the internal problems within China. And so that's why, as I said, I think they're not as willing to be as forthcoming with other religions as they are with the Catholics. So they're in the back of their mind, they're going, you know, first off, I would say if I was the Chinese Communist Party, I'd be very happy to have the unofficial and official church split, you know, divide and conquer type of idea. But there's something else that's going on here, and that's, of course, Taiwan. And the idea that they would move, you know, right now there's not an official papal nuncio in Taiwan, but the Vatican still officially recognizes the Republic of China and Taiwan as the legitimate government of China. So I think in many ways, this is like the card that the Vatican is holding. It's not a big card because the Vatican has always said they're willing to recognize Beijing. But I think before they do that, there's some preconditions. So, you know, Beijing is playing this game. I find it to be fascinating because that I think they've been more forthcoming with the Vatican than they have been doing with other religions.
Okay, I just wonder at this point, when you look forward to what is fair to expect in the next 2 years, you know, when after the agreement has been renewed, do you think what is happening right now will change the way Beijing handles religious affairs, at least Catholic affairs in China?
Well, as we were saying, that Xi Jinping has been much more strict with all religions. And I think this is a concern that the party has had about the legitimacy of the Communist Party and the way that people has turned to religion as a source of stability, of legitimacy. What would happen in the next 2 years? Well, you know, as Parolin says, it's an experiment. Will they continue to deal with the other underground bishops that they would like to have brought into the to be officially recognized? Well, hopefully they will. Will the Catholic Church eventually recognize the bishops' conference? What I'm assuming will happen is that there will be small steps. There will be small steps, but even small steps are important. Because, again, the key here is the need for the Catholic individual Catholic believers in China to accept the other Catholics, to accept all Chinese Catholics as Catholic and not to see them as enemies. And this is something that the bishops and everyone else will have to really focus on has really nothing to do as much with the party, because there's just a limit to what the Catholic Church can do to change Xi Jinping's strategies toward religious policy.
That's all we have for you this week on Inside China. As always, we remind you to keep up to date with all the developing news that's happening across China and around the world at scmp.com. My name is Kinling Lo.
And I'm Mimi Lau. Please rate us on whatever podcast app you're listening on right now. And if you're on iTunes, take 30 seconds to write us a review. It will be super helpful to let other people find us and listen as well. Thank you for wearing your mask.
And thank you for keeping your social distance.
We'll speak to you soon. Meanwhile, keep the faith and be healthy.
For more podcasts from the South China Morning Post, head to scmp.com, where you can hear more about technology, trade, culture, and society.